Please be seated, everyone.
Okay. Good morning. Before we proceed with the arguments today, we understand we have a group from Northwest Career College with Cassidy Wagner, JD, Juris Doctor. Cassidy, where are you? That's, thank you for bringing the class here. I hope you they'll enjoy our arguments today. We've got a couple of interesting cases, and you'll see with the students, we have some two fine attorneys here this morning arguing it. What we do is we give each side 15 minutes to argue for a total of 30 minutes, and the person who's the appellant or the person filing the appeal who lost in the district court gets to reserve part of that 15 minutes that they want for rebuttal arguments so they can respond to what their opposing counsel says so that they can divide it with the opposing counsel has to use the whole 15 minutes. So that's how we do it, and then we listen to the arguments, and then the Supreme Court, we discuss the case afterwards. We haven't decided what to do. That's why we have the arguments today, because the issues have been raised, and all our decisions are in writing, and they take probably at least 90 to 120 days or so, depending on the complexity of the case. So we don't do anything verbally. We don't announce a result today, but we do everything the court does in writing. So that's how it works. So anyway, with that in mind, Cassidy, thank you. You can have a seat. Mr. Arroyo, you're representing the appellant here today. Let me call the case. It's case number 72358. Is it Kyle? Is how he pronounces it?
I believe it is Keeley.
Keeley versus Calderon. Okay, Mr. Arroyo represents the appellant. Mr. Tawdry representing the respondents. And Mr. Arroyo, did you want to reserve any time in rebuttal?
I would like to reserve 5 minutes.
5 minutes. So you lose your 10 minutes, and then you'll hear a beep, and then that'll tell you there's 5 minutes waiting. But you need to stop at that time, or it eats into your 5 minutes, then like that, because we try and kind of make the time equal to both sides, you know, as far as the argument. Also, for the record today, normally the Supreme Court has 7 members here hearing cases like this. However, Chief Justice Douglas and Justice Chair are retiring at the beginning of January, so they will not be participating in the case today. And we also have Justice Stiglitz is in Carson City today. You'll see her up in the video. So we have a simultaneous video going, so Justice Stiglitz may have some questions as well as we proceed through these arguments.
May I add one thing?
Sure.
The Supreme Court has a website where we post all of the decisions that resolve a case. So if you're interested in either of the cases today that is argued and you want to find out about the outcome, you can go on our website and look it up. There are two types of decisions that we render. They're either so-called published or unpublished, but they're actually all published on our website. And all you need to do is know the party name. So if you make a note and you're curious, how did it come out, and you want to know, you can look on the website and find it. We're very proud of our website. It's free. You just go in and type Nevada Supreme Court, and then you look under either orders or opinions. So you'll get to find out the end of the story down the road.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Roy, you may proceed.
May it please the court, Robert Arroyo, on behalf of Mr. Keeley, I would just like to briefly say that I did take this case pursuant to the pro bono project.
Thank you. I know you were special public defenders who do criminal cases. We appreciate the attorneys who volunteer for the pro bono program, meaning they're donating their time for these. And whenever you volunteer as an attorney for the pro bono program, you get the automatic right to have an oral argument of the case. So with that background, Mr. Arroyo, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you. I would just like to say that Mr. Knudsen is a law student that helped me with the briefs in this case, and he is present today too. Mr. Keeley asserts that his rights under the First and 14th Amendments and under RLIPA were violated because he was denied his ability to practice his Native American or religious beliefs due to his inability to prove his ethnicity by an approved means. The practice of requiring inmates to have to prove their ethnicity to practice their sincerely held religious beliefs should be held invalid under any of the claims set forth by Mr. Keeley. As the Federal District Court in Combs noted, under the Constitution, the freedom to believe or not believe in a religious faith is reserved not to a select class of citizens, but to all. I'd like to start off with the First Amendment claim, since the District Court gave that the most weight in its, gave it the biggest analysis in its opinion. As an initial matter, the respondents did not challenge whether or not Mr. Keeley had a sincerely held belief or whether or not that belief was actually rooted in the Native American religion. The district court did base its order denying or granting summary judgment on the fact that it felt that the prison had a legitimate goal in having to sort out those trying to dishonestly claim social religious benefits to avoid harm to the actual Native American inmates and to maintain an orderly prison. And it did determine that the ethnicity requirement is reasonably related to that goal. It's not clear how the court determined that Native Americans would be harmed by other people that can't prove ethnicity practicing those beliefs, but it is clear that the district court sanctioned the practice of using race as a means to determine sincerity in those beliefs. This practice of using race to determine sincerity has been rejected by federal courts that have determined the issue. So we would ask that this court find that that is an invalid way of determining sincerity of beliefs.
The state does argue, though, in opposition, in its responding brief, it makes two points to that argument. One, they say that was not advanced in the district court. And two, they say that there is a legitimate penological interest in limiting Native American services to Native American inmates. It's at pages 24 to 25 of their brief. And in essence, they say that because Native Americans have suffered a history of discrimination, that it's a rational basis for showing tribal affiliation for the protections to attach. What do you say in response to that argument?
To the first argument, I believe that the district court's order explicitly states that it found that the goal was to protect Native Americans. So the district court made a finding that that is a legitimate goal of the prison, to protect Native Americans by determining who's fraudulently trying to practice Native American religion. So that's clearly in the order and was an issue determined by the district court. As to the second question, I would state that I believe the respondent's brief cites to the American Indian Religious Freedom Act for it. I believe Supreme Court cases that have analyzed that act have actually said that that does not give Native Americans any additional rights, that that was really a joint resolution passed in Congress just to give Native Americans equal rights. So it doesn't give them any additional standing. It doesn't create an individual cause of action under federal law. So it's really just to make sure that they are treated equally.
But the rationale for that statute, as I understand it, and it's been upheld, is to remedy historical discrimination and prevent it by restricting the act to people who have a tribal affiliation or Native American ancestry.
I believe in the United States Supreme Court case, I think it's Ling versus Indian Cemetery Protective Association, that the court noted that the bill will not change any existing state or federal law. So the equal protection analysis or it's to put them on equal footing. It's not to burden any other religion. And that's really what the analysis should be, is how is it burden Mr. Keeley, whether or not Native Americans were given extra protections that are not afforded to...
If Mr. Keeley's equal protection claim is correct, this act would be unconstitutional, and it's not been held so. In fact, the opposite's been held.
And I would just point out that the Supreme Court decisions have pointed out that that the act really has no teeth, that it didn't create any... it's just basically a joint resolution on the for Congress to make sure that they are equally are treating Native Americans equally, not to give any more rights or to actually it doesn't give a cause of action. So, and I believe that there's no support in the record to show that Native Americans are actually harmed by somebody that can't prove they're Native American practicing that religion. In fact, Mr. Keeley has affidavits from several other self-identified Native Americans in protective segregation that support his lawsuit today. So there is really no connection that that this actually protects Native Americans.
Thank you.
Mr. Aurora, was there evidence presented to the district court that Mr. Keeley did this before he was incarcerated? Is this something that he's done his whole life, these religious ceremonies, or is this something that has just come up recently? Is there any record on that point?
There is a document from 2005 when he was housed in Lovelock that shows that he asserts that Native American is his faith. So I believe there's a form that NDOC asks inmates to fill out where they get to declare their affiliation. So since 2005, he has declared Native American as his religion. I don't believe there's anything else to determine, or there's no other evidence in the record whether or not he participated in the sweat lodge or pipe ceremonies up at Lovelock, where it seems like he was housed for the majority of his time prior to this. But there is...
I'm on the video. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sir, no one's challenging here whether or not Mr. Keeley is sincere in his religious beliefs, correct? That issue is not before us.
The state That's is correct.
Challenging the sincerity, just whether or not he's proved his ancestry. Is that correct?
That is correct. There was no findings made about the sincerity of his beliefs. It was not raised by the respondents. It was not a decision decided by the district court. The district court on the First Amendment analysis gave a straightforward analysis on the four Turner factors, which we discussed in our brief, which are we are saying that weighs in favor of finding that this ethnicity requirement is not reasonable. First, I think the federal courts have said that in regards to the first factor, federal courts have said that it's not a rational way to determine sincerity. This has, for factor number two, it has resulted in outright ban of his ability to practice in the sweat lodge or pipe ceremonies. So he has no other alternatives. On factor three, the impact on prison resources, there's nothing in the record really on this factor about how it would affect the prison if we had a more inclusive policy. And to the fourth factor, we believe there are other alternatives to detect fraud, if easier alternatives. I think Justice Gibbons kind of hit on it. Is there any other evidence from his time at the NDOC that would bear on his sincerity? So there are other ways beyond just race as a way of determining sincerity. In regards to the RLUIPA claim, the district court granted the summary judgment on the basis that the ethnicity requirement did not substantially burden Mr. Keeley's religious exercise. Once again, I have my 5 minutes I'd like to reserve.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chaudhry, on behalf of the state of Nevada.
Thank you, Chief Justice Gibbons. May it please the court, this is Frank Chaudhry, Senior Deputy Attorney General, representing the Nevada Department of Corrections and the individual defendants, Warden Dwight Nevin, Director James Cox, and Chaplain Julio Calderon out of High Desert State Prison. I'd also like to thank Mr. Arroyo for coming on as pro bono counsel. We went to Boyd Law School together at the same time. And the AG's office gets a ton of these inmate appeal cases, and having pro bono counsel allows much more thorough briefing and development of case law that is frequently absent. So thank you for the time, and as well as the Boyd School of Law. As the court knows, this is a de novo review. of a summary judgment order granted in favor of the Nevada Department of Corrections based on the defendant's motion for summary judgment, which he, with Justice or Judge Villani down at the 8th Judicial District. This is a 1983 case wherein Mr. Killey had alleged his religious rights were violated under the 1st, 8th, and 14th Amendments when NDOC refused to offer Native American religious services for protective custody inmates during 2013 and 2014. The claim falls under both state 1983 claims and the Federal Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, also referenced as RLUIPA. There was no oral arguments based on Mr. Killey's incarceration, so there's no transcripts to develop the underlying case. Now, a lot of the argument has been framed as RLUIPA and race-slash-ethnicity-based denial of Mr. Killey's religious rights. The primary reason why Mr. Killey was denied any denied group religious services during 2013 was and 2014 was more a practical and penological interest. Mr. Killey is a level 3 classification inmate. He's incarcerated in 2003 for sexual assault with a minor. I don't say that to besmirch Mr. Killey or his case. That is important to note because it puts him as a protective segregation inmate, which is level 3 classification, which cannot be intermingled generally with the general population.
Is that for their protection issue?
By and large, Your Honor, and during the time from probably about 2005 to 2012 where Mr. Killey was in Lovelock, that was primarily a protective segregation institution. It's a small yard, 500 to 700 inmates, and during that time there was either high-profile inmates at O.J. Simpson or someone with large media queries, and protective segregation inmates, that's where most of the sexual offenders were housed during this time. In 2013, Mr. Killey was moved down to High Desert State Prison. That's in Indian Springs. This is the largest institution in Nevada, about 4,000 inmates. During the time, it was probably about 30% protective segregation. And he was housed in protective segregation during this time, and High Desert, due to the amount of people there, had instituted a 5 inmate policy under its Operation Procedure 800, which is attached to the both Mr. Killey's record and the motion for summary judgment. And this is actually the reason why Mr. Killey was not allowed to participate in group chapel services. High Desert has over 4,000 people. There are 4,000 inmates, I should say. There is 28 recognized religions and one chapel to accommodate them all. Keeping in mind that with the high demand for all these services, there's also a necessary separation of general population and protective segregation inmates. Never the two shall intermingle. Just general security concerns, they don't intermingle in the yard, they don't intermingle in their cells, they're not going to be together at mess hall, basically at any functional institution. Any institutional function. Protective segregation inmates are in their own cell, they get their own yard, their own units, they get their own yard time, and they get their own religious services.
Can they ask to be released from this protective segregation, or is that a decision that the warden makes?
Your Honor, it is a case-by-case basis, but an inmate in protective segregation that voluntarily puts himself within this level of classification may ask for a release. For instance, if an inmate is concerned about his safety because of a fight between people in a cell, he can voluntarily insert himself into protective segregation, and when he thinks things are blown over, come back down to a level 2. If it's a violent inmate or somebody that has shown any lack of proclivity to be able to live with other people or is a danger to staff, that kind of level 3 inmate would not be able to self-withdraw from protective segregation.
Mr. Tawdry, I'm curious about restriction on five-person or the imposition of the five-person requirement at the Southern Correctional Facility. I'm informed that the Nevada Department of Corrections Religious Practice Manual expressly allows individual pipe ceremonies for inmates in segregated housing. So was this five-person requirement limited to that particular prison in the overall prison system? Was it a regulation that it enacted? How do we know all of this? Because it seems as though the regulations permit individual practice of these ceremonies.
Yes, Your Honor. High Desert is the only facility that has the five inmate limitation. And that's just a side effect of the size of the yard. The second biggest institution in Southern Desert at 2,300. And further, High Desert isn't an open yard. And when I say that, I mean when there's not scheduled activity. In an open yard, when there's not scheduled activities, the inmate population is generally allowed to be outside and about. In High Desert, the inmates have to be escorted by search and escort, basically from cell to any other location that they go to. So this is a pure High Desert function. We're not going to run into that at any of the other institutions.
All right, and then how is that set out? Is there a separate regulation within the NDOC adopted regulations that establishes this five-person requirement that's unique to High Desert?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is all of this reflected in the record, or are you telling us this because of your extensive experience with these cases? I want to know what the record reflects on this issue.
Oh, no problem, Justice Hardesty. This is under the record. It specifically is in the motion for summary judgment, and I believe it's also in Mr. Achilles' record from earlier in the case. This is Operation Procedure 800. I believe it's Exhibit 6 to the summary judgment. Operational Procedure 800 governs religious operations in High Desert State Prison. This is based on Administrative Regulation 810, which is the overall NDOC regulations that, while not promulgated as law in the state, are the operating procedures for the entire NDOC.
It's okay. I wanted you to finish your response. I asked you a question. So
within Operation Procedure 800, there's four attachments. 800.2 is going to be the religious, within 800, there's a chapel schedule that lays out the hour-long time for all of the religious groups separated by unit, as general population units and the operation and the protective segregation units. Within the actual chapel schedule itself, it outlines the maximum amount of inmates, which can be either 40 or 75, depending on where exactly these chapels are held, and the minimum of five inmates. Also within there, it says that the chaplain and an officer must be present.
So it would seem like the circling back to Mr. Arroyo's argument about the requirement to demonstrate ancestry and its apparent purpose to relate to avoiding fraudulent participation, which would be offensive to Native American Indians or those practicing that religion. If one is allowed in all the other institutions to practice on their own, why would ancestry be necessary as a requirement? Because the underlying purpose apparently for that requirement is to prevent fraud and imposition on others. And then apparently this comes about, that requirement, is more pronounced or necessary in High Desert only because of its five-person requirement. Do you understand my question here? It seems like the two are related.
Yes, Ron, I'll try to parse that out a little bit. there's kind of subparts of the Native American spirituality that I have to slightly address separately. Mr. Kelly was permitted and did indeed affiliate with the Native American spirituality group in 2005. We don't have records of how often he went or if he didn't go in Lovelock or not. Somebody of any ethnicity, any inmate can declare themselves Native American spirituality. There's a discrete subpart, and those people, those inmates that align themselves with Native American can attend all group chapel services that are done on a weekly basis. Within the weekly, beyond the weekly chapel services, there's also sweat lodge ceremonies. Now those are special occasions. That is by no means the weekly. It's not like a weekly Catholic mass. That's just part of it where you take communion and whatnot. The sweat lodge ceremonies are a discrete subpart wherein there is a sweat lodge set outside High Desert State Prison by the chaplain's yard. And in order for a person to go in there, first they have to have enough people for the group ceremonies. But then that inmate, beyond simply having being affiliated with the Native American religion, must submit a Bureau of Indian Affairs number, letter of affiliation with a tribe, letter identifying tribal living at some point in their life, or a recommendation and or letter from the Nevada Bureau of Indian Commission. So there is a distinction between just being able to go to the group services, which Mr. Kelly would have always been able to do, if there was five inmates that were requesting services in protective segregation, and that specifically is laid out in Chaplain Calderon's declaration in the record below, that had there been five people that were requesting it from protective segregation, Mr. Kelly would have been able to go. He's been allowed to go since early 2015 to any group services. We never actually came to the point of Mr. Kelly requesting to go to a sweat lodge ceremony, as he had never requested to be able to go to these group services when protective segregation was allowed.
Can an inmate in Lovelock go to a sweat lodge, if I've stated this correctly, ceremony on their own?
Oh, gosh. At Lovelock, it would be during a... Now, this isn't developed below, but at Lovelock, it would be based upon the practice schedule, and since they don't have... Since that institution is smaller and doesn't have a numerical policy, an inmate there likely would be able to attend that service solo as long as he had provided at least one of the four methodologies to allow.
I'm just trying to clarify this because I understood it in 2013 he was in Lovelock and then was transmitted to Southern Nevada in 14 or 15. Is that right?
Almost. He was transferred in early 2013, Your Honor, and it was during 2013 and 2014 that there was no protective segregation practices, no protective segregation hourly services provided. During that time, there was always general population, but in those 2 years, there was no protective segregation. And then in 2015, early 2015, at High Desert is when the protective segregation was added to the group schedule.
So he was not permitted to participate because of the failure to provide his ancestry, or because he never asked?
He never asked. The Nevada Department of Corrections never got to that point. In 2015, In 2015, when groups protective segregation chapel services were allowed, Mr. Curley never once submitted a request to go on the call-out list to go to any religious services.
Mm-hmm.
And the call, this is like the weekly sign-up.
Sure. And is that part of the record, that fact?
Yes, Your Honor. In the motion for summary judgment, I think Exhibit 5 has the call-out list that that was during 2013 and 2014. Mm-hmm. It's redacted to take away the inmate name, but it shows that during 2013 and 14, when there was no protective segregation, he asked for the call-out list. When he was finally allowed, he never once requested after his allowed.
And if Justice Gibbons will permit, I have one additional question.
Of course.
And that question is, what is the explanation from High Desert under this operating procedure and NDOC for the regulation that requires a demonstration of ancestry?
The section of the religious practice manual that specifically referenced, and this is also in the record under the religious practice manual, right, which is AR 810 attachment 2. The sections of the practice manual that specifically regard Native American practices are based upon Code of Federal Regulation definitions of Native American spirituality and done in accordance with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. So there wasn't too many, they didn't put too much original writing into that section. This is basically on CFR.
Okay. So you're, in effect, the prison has adopted the characterization or definition, if you will, of this ethnicity group from CFRs.
Yes, Your Honor.
So there isn't any independent rationale, if you will, by the prison to enact that CFR or to enact that requirement in this record.
In the record, I would submit that, okay, not independent. I hope I'm answering this correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Not independently. The state of Nevada doesn't make any determinations as to the actual ethnicity requirement or require like a DNA test or anything like that. Based on AR,
it seems odd, Mr. Tawdry, and this is not intended to insult your argument. I respect your point and appreciate the input, but it just seems odd that one would require an ethnicity requirement when the prison does not challenge, and like in the Paliotto case that I wrote, doesn't challenge the good faith held beliefs of the inmate.
Well, we don't know. There is no challenge of the good faith belief, and if there is five people,
so it seems inconsistent to me to say, well, we don't challenge his good faith belief in this religion, even though he might not be able to demonstrate ancestry, but we're still going to require a showing of ancestry.
Well, that, and
because CFRs do it.
And Your Honor, I went out to confirm with the chaplain how this would hypothetically work had Mr. Kelly made the request to attend these services. And essentially he'd be able to go to all group chapel services, and that's going to be a weekly meeting.
I guess the bottom line is, in the absence of his asking to go, what are we doing here?
We're upholding the five inmate policy. Is the only thing that Mr. Kelly asked for was to go when there was no group policy. There was no constitutional harm because he never once requested, when there was group chapel services, he never once requested to be able to go. Maybe he was discouraged, I don't know. But the only thing the most important thing for this court to affirm is that the policy requiring five inmates of general or protective segregation to request chapel services be upheld as something based upon legitimate theological interests, based upon efficient use of staff and resources.
Thank you.
Good, Mr. Tucker. Mr. Roy, you have a little over 5 minutes remaining.
Justice Stiglitz had a question.
Oh, Justice Stiglitz, did you have a question?
Yeah, for Mr. Tawdry?
Yes, please. I'm sorry.
I mean, I note in the record that there were at least three grievances in 2013 and 2014 that Mr. Kelly was denied participation because of his failure to show his ancestry. So just to that point, but question, would he have been permitted to participate in pipe ceremonies solo in his own cell?
No, Your Honor. Not in High Desert. Each of the religious groups, Native American, Jewish, whatever have you, has group chapel property that's held under lock and key to be used in group chapel services during the weekly hour-long session. The pipe itself and the tobacco would fall under group services and would basically only be accessible with the chaplain or a approved volunteer there. So he would not have been able to use the pipe in his own cell, and that one, while not specifically addressed, that would be under security interests and basically not allowing an inmate to have a lighter, tobacco, and pipe in his cell. And that kind of goes along with all the group religious properties.
But your religious practice manual allows for individual pipe ceremonies for individuals who are in segregated housing. Isn't that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Not at High Desert, because of the requirement of having supervision. I know that NDOC is kind of morphing that. Well, let's call it certainly not under the record here because it's modern times. NDOC is further evolving their policy on solo worship. But no, Mr. Kelly would have been able to perform, you know, worship in his cell. However, would not be able to have the group property in his cell. Any use of the pipe outside, sorry, that sounded weird, any use of the tobacco pipe and the ceremonial pipe in the other institutions is going to be supervised to some extent.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Royal.
The record in this case indicates that, and I would draw your attention to the record on appeal at page 514, indicates that a new chapel schedule was issued in 2016, February 18, 2016, which allowed for Native Americans in protective segregations to meet for 1 hour in group services per week. Then if you look at the record on a record of appeal 516, Mr. Kelly submitted an inmate request form asking to be placed on list for Native land access, which was denied by Chaplain Calderon, saying your Native papers are not in your file, you will not be on the list. And that is February 2016. It's 2 days after the schedule was released. So 2 days after Mr. Kelly does make a request for Native land access. I think it's important to point out the some of the differences. Since Native American is considered an earth-based religion, we keep using the word chapel kind of interchangeably, but it's not in the same sense that Catholics or Muslims or Jewish inmates would congregate somewhere inside. Their chapel service would actually be going outside to the Native American land that is separated for them. So that is where the sweat lodge would be located. That's where he would be able to participate in the pipe or the pipe ceremonies and the powwows. So when he's asking for land access, that is where the group services are held for Native Americans, since they are earth-based religion. And even if he was allowed to have the pipe ceremony in his cell, which respondents admit that he can't, because he can't prove, or because he's not allowed at High Desert, he still wouldn't be allowed to, or he'd still be denied his, there'd be a substantial burden on his religious exercise in the sweat lodge. So these are individual religious exercises that are substantially burdened. And under Hobbs.
Well, based on your explanation, Mr. Arroyo, someone practicing this faith wouldn't exercise the sweat lodge inside their cell anyway. That's certainly not going to be an earth-based place to practice this religion.
Correct, and that is the issue we have with the district court's opinion that Mr. Keeley's religious exercise was not substantially burdened because he can practice within his cell. And I think that is the wrong way to look at whether or not religious exercise was substantially burdened. It's not.
Is his claim limited to the time he was at High Desert?
That is correct. So I believe he's from 2013 to the present time. He's been denied.
And what about the point that counsel makes that other than the record site you've offered us for 2016, he had not requested to participate in chapel services?
Is that, I might have misheard your question, after 2016?
No, prior to February of 2016, my understanding from Mr. Todre's representations is that he had not made a request, your client had not made a request to participate in group chapel services. High Desert.
I believe that would be inaccurate. Starting in 2013, Mr. Keeley filed grievances asking why was there no time slot for Native Americans in protective custody. And then I believe there was a grievance process where he went through the different steps of filing different grievances, I believe from 2013 to 2014, asking for land access for Native Americans in protective custody, where he was denied based on both there's not enough inmates and he's not Native American. He didn't have the proper paperwork. And then he filed his complaint in the district court, and after the complaint was filed is when the chapel schedule was amended to allow 1 hour of group service for Native Americans in protective services. So he had been asking for that land access prior to the schedule change. I believe that's clear in the record before he files his complaint that he went through the proper grievance process.
Okay, thank you.
I think that pretty much is all my time, unless there's any other questions.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Arroyo. Mr. Todre, thank you for the excellent arguments. Very interesting issue. We don't get ones like this very often, so it's interesting to dig into it. So at this time, the case will stand submitted.